This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Lots to get through today. Champions League to look back on, a top-of-the-table Premier League clash to dissect, and looking ahead to what should be a thrilling weekend of Premier League action. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings today. Mark, you join us and our lovely listeners after a truly wonderful tipping display last week. Well done.
Oh, thank you, Jack. Yeah, it's nice when most of them go in. You have enough bad weeks, don't you? So I suppose you've got to celebrate the successes. But as all good managers say, you know, never get too high, never get too low. But yeah, I was 9 out of 10 in the sort of Premier League predictions, and then winners in the prop shop, the treble and the nat. So, onwards and upwards.
And we're a fairly sort of relaxed podcast, so not too many rules, but I'm just glad that our one rule still applies when you put up a shot on target bet, back them to score, because once again, happened last week.
It did, yeah. Joao Felix continued the trend. It's now the last three that we've done that. They've managed to score a goal, a couple of them being the first goal as well, haven't they? I suppose in some ways you feel a little bit let down, but I mean, you know, I don't think you should be, because like, and I often hear this with, you know, like when you back somebody to place and then they win and stuff like that. Well, you know, you took what you thought was the best option at the time. I do think that people can get a little bit too worked up over kind of, you know, those type of things. I mean, you know, if I thought Joao Felix was a good bet to score, then I would have put him up to score. I thought the best bet was for him to have the shot on target. He did, and all's good. All's well that ends well.
Can't grumble with a winner, can you? I did see for those of our listeners that have Bet365 accounts, they boosted it just before kickoff as well. So well done to any of you that got on that. We must start, Mark, I think, with the Premier League and the fact that Manchester City have gone to the top of the table after beating Arsenal 3-1. Goals from De Bruyne, Grealish and Haaland. Saka scored a penalty just before half-time for Arsenal's only goal. Arsenal do have a game in hand on the table toppers, but all change in the Premier League.
Yeah, you know, City have gone reasonably strong favourites. I saw Arsenal were out to about sort of 2-1 on the Betfair exchange. It was a strange game, wasn't it? Because
it was, yeah.
I mean, Arsenal were contributed to their own defeat, a couple of mistakes, some key errors at big moments in the match. Wasn't a huge amount. I mean, first half, I mean, I thought Arsenal shaded it, if anything, really. Recovered from going a goal down. I do think it was a penalty. I thought that was the right decision. And then you felt like Arsenal actually would go on and maybe at least sort of hold on to a draw, which would have been a better result for them. The second half, though, Man City were the better team, particularly when Pep Guardiola stopped messing around, moved Bernardo Silva away from that hybrid left-back role that, I mean, he clearly can't do in a game like that when he's actually got to do a lot of defending. And when they brought on, a proper defender and moved Ake out to left-back, the team settled down. I thought they were hitting too many long balls in the first half. In the second half, they mixed it up more. And it was not a complete City performance. I wouldn't go that far, but certainly did enough to win the game in the end. And a big win at that.
It was a huge win. It was just nice to see, Mark, from a personal point of view, just seeing De Bruyne and Haaland link up again, because it feels like a little while since kind of Pep's seemingly had some sort of common sense and put those together, and it just does work, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I still don't understand why he was left out of that game against Tottenham, you know, the week before. De Bruyne's their best player. He's the best player in the league, isn't he?
Brilliant.
You know, why would you not play him in a difficult away game? It wasn't even like he'd been snowed under and played loads of minutes previously. I mean, they've been, you know, FA Cup games, and they're not in Champions League yet. And, Belgium didn't go far in the World Cup. It was a bad decision from Pep, I think. And all managers make them. What will have pleased, I think, Guardiola was the fact that they only conceded one shot on target, you know, for such a difficult away game. That's always a good statistic. But Nketiah had a couple of chances, didn't he, with his head They're always more difficult with the head than what you often hear, don't you, commentators, oh, he's got to score. Statistically, scoring with your head, it's just not as big a chance as what the common man thinks in those situations. But they were chances that I think in a game like that, where you don't get loads, do you, against Man City, you would have hoped to have at least made the goalkeeper work. I'll go down the cliche route. And Nketiah didn't manage to do that. And, you know, I think in the end, Arsenal deserve to lose over the 90 minutes.
Yeah, a few little reasons maybe to be concerned for Arsenal fans. We'll be previewing their game this weekend later on in the show. Let's move on to Champions League. We've been treated with football this week. We'll start with Wednesday's action, where Dortmund beat Chelsea. And what's going wrong at Chelsea, Mark? Because I feel like on every, you know, episode, we're like, oh, this could, next week could be the week where things sort of click for Chelsea and new signings start to settle in. But it's not really happening.
Well, they played really well, I thought, in this game. I mean, 8 shots on target. João Félix hit the bar. They were, you know, creating good opportunities. There was one cleared off the line. Chelsea brought all of the Brighton staff. They brought a load of the Brighton staff. And it looks like they're getting kind of the Brighton finishing that they had under Potter, where they dominate a lot of games and not make the most of their opportunities. And you feel like it will come. Next week it will come. It's interesting, isn't it, that Brighton have scored a load more goals since Potter left than when he was there, even though kind of from a chance creation point of view, it doesn't feel like a huge difference. What I'm also finding strange is that my perception of Chelsea is just a club that over the last 15 years has not cared how they've done it. They just won. And the amount of times they would just turn up for big games and just win them or not lose them. And that was under a succession of managers and, you know, even under like Di Matteo and Avram Grant, they managed to reach Champions League finals. Now it feels like they're all about the process and, you know, they're slowly getting there and it will take time. And my instincts are just saying, like, they, you know, Potter can't have long left because this is not what Chelsea do. But everything you hear from the owners is that they're going to give Potter the time to get it right. I mean, I don't know. I felt like they played.
What would
well
you
enough.
Do, Mark? If you were the owner of Chelsea, what would you do? I know you've got the money to do so, but just imagine.
I suppose. I mean, if I had $500 million to spend on footballers, I probably wouldn't bother, and I'd just be sitting on a yacht somewhere and I'm just chilling. No, I would keep Potter until the end of the season, but I'd want to see significant progress. I would think between now and then, before deciding what I would do. One thing I would do, actually, is I'd just put a little call in to Jurgen Klopp and make sure everything's okay with him at Liverpool. Because he's the kind of manager that I think would do great things with like a young, energetic team like he has done previously. But no, I would probably give Potter until the end of the season. But it's all well and good, Todd Bowley saying that Potter will be given time. If the Chelsea fans lose faith, I don't know where you go from there. But this was not a game that Chelsea deserved to lose. You know, I think if they play like that every week, there will be wins to come. And they've just done on the counter attack, and the game's not over. If, like I say, if they have 8 shots on target at Stamford Bridge, I think they'll probably qualify.
The other game on the Wednesday was Club Brugge 0, Benfica 2. Any word on that, Mark? There's some sort of exciting things going on at Benfica, it seems, at the moment.
Yeah, lose a lot of players. Enzo Fernandes, Darwin Nunez back in the summer. Doesn't seem to matter. Flying high in the Portuguese table. I think Roger Smith, their coach, is somebody I really liked when he was in Germany. Went off the radar. He's coming back into it now. And for Club Brugge, I mean, don't want to be too condescending. We probably haven't got too many listeners from their supporters anyway. But, I mean, reaching the last 16 was an achievement. I quite liked Scott Parker's jacket that he had on the sidelines. It was still a bit strange to see him managing Club Brugge, but he had what looked like a shacket. I don't know if you own one of those.
No, I don't have a shacket. I don't. I also don't think I've got the style of Scott Parker to pull something like that off, to be honest.
It was comfortable enough for Benfica. Two mistakes, though, from Club Brugge, which, a bit like the Arsenal game, you know, you end up kicking yourself because you've kind of thrown it away rather than made the opposition work for it.
Would you like to talk about Tuesday's Champions League action, or just pass that by and act like it never happened.
Well, I mean, I suppose we'll start with PSG v Bayern, because, I mean, that was the bigger game of the two. Kylian Mbappe not being fit to start, I think, was a huge blow for Paris. They improved when he came on. Up until that point, Bayern Munich had totally dominated. And they'll probably be thinking they could have put the tie to bed. And talking of going to bed, that's something maybe Neymar should do. Do you see that story about his neighbours are complaining of the amount of partying that's been going on from Neymar's house? And there's like a local law in terms of like fines for, you know, that kind of general disturbance. And of course, that's, you know, he's just paying that. It doesn't bother him. But immediately after the game, they asked Mbappe sort of what Paris's chances of going through were. And he said, you know, we've still got a chance as long as everybody eats and sleeps well.
Oh, blimey. Up to
the game. So presumably a dig at Neymar. And that's the problem, isn't it, with Paris? You just worry about that team unity individually and stylistically, that they can look great. But just when it comes to it, that team effort just isn't quite there. I was surprised that Bayern won that first game, but they put themselves in a great position. I think Milan against Tottenham was a real... I honestly was bored watching it. They were two really bad teams playing against each other. And I've been a big supporter of getting rid of the away goal rule because I think it's just unfair. But the problem with it is in a game like that where Milan scored early and were then happy to win the game 1-0, and Tottenham were probably thinking, well, 1-0 is not a terrible result for us. And it played out like that. It was two really average teams playing against each other. And it was just dull. It was really dull. Milan didn't create much. Tottenham didn't create much. And 1-0 was probably about a fair result.
Let's hope for better in the return leg. Hopefully the game we'll be previewing next will be more exciting. Yes, it's our match of the day for this week. We're going for Newcastle against Liverpool. This one, 5:30 on Saturday. 11-8 Newcastle, 19-10 Liverpool, 12-5 the draw. Things will be slightly happier in the Liverpool camp after a good Merseyside derby win, Mark.
They will. They will. I think that win's been overrated, though. Because Liverpool, you know, winning a derby is always important, isn't it, to the fans? But, like, Sky were going on as if, like, they'd maybe taken down, I don't know, Chelsea or maybe even somebody better than Chelsea currently are. I mean, it was an important win. Of course it was, given Liverpool's form. But I didn't think the performance was, like, amazing. Certainly not as good as what it was made out to be on TV. And let's face it, you know, Tarkowski has that header that hits the post. Liverpool go up the other end and score. It could have been 1-0 to Everton. You maybe got a completely different game. I thought they sort of grew into it and then were able to win it quite easily. But Everton have been rubbish away from home for a long, long time. So let's see if Liverpool can do it, you know, in what is a much different game, I think, against Newcastle. What it has done, though, of course, is really opened up the race for the top four, with, you know, Newcastle slipping up lately, Tottenham not looking particularly consistent. You know, Liverpool, for all their woes, are definitely in this top four race, but they'll feel like they've probably got to win this game to get themselves, you know, properly back in the picture.
In terms of Newcastle, Mark, I mean, we know what they're about now. They're a solid outfit. The unbeaten run continues, but wins are drying up. Just looking through their sort of past, I don't know, 10, 15 games, low-scoring affairs, aren't they? They probably need to start scoring a few more if they want to start winning some more games. I know that sounds obvious, but 1-1, 1-1, 2-1, 1-0, 0-0. Like, need some goals.
They do, yeah. Obviously, Callum Wilson's not fit every week, is he? And sort of, it feels like they're nursing him, like, just through the season. Never quite sure whether he's going to, you know, pick up a, not major injury, but just one that keeps him out. Isaka's somebody that has had his own injury problems. Obviously, Guimaraes has been suspended, so that sort of curtails the creativity in midfield. I mean, they're still having a good season, aren't they? You know, so I don't want to be too harsh on them, because I didn't expect them to be more than halfway through the campaign. So they will have, I suppose, ups and downs within it. And I also think that now they're getting the respect that of a top four team, if you like. So it becomes more difficult to break opponents down, doesn't it? You're not going to go to St James's and, you know, and try and go toe-to-toe with them like West Ham. I watched that game the other week. You know, West Ham were more than happy with a point out of that game. And that is a different skill that you need to learn. I mean, going back to Arsenal, I think Arsenal have found that in recent matches against Everton and Brentford. It can be, and Newcastle as well, who went to the Emirates and got the 0-0. All of a sudden, you start getting respect. And then it's a different game trying to open teams up and, you know, have that guile. And I think where Newcastle may be lacking as well is off the bench, where the squad, as was found out when they mixed and matched it at Sheffield Wednesday and went out of the FA Cup, the squad's not quite strong enough at the moment. So that in itself brings issues.
I think in terms of Liverpool, Mark, we kind of know the concerns that they've got with their midfield and the defence is poor this season. But on paper, the front three is, you know, is strong. You've got Salah, Gakpo and Nunes. That's who started against Everton. But where are we at? I know that Salah sort of got back on the score sheet in midweek. Gakpo scored as well. But to go from Salah, Firmino, Mane to those three, it still doesn't feel like they're quite clicking.
Well, they're not clicking. You know, I know Salah did score against Everton, but he's not been in great nick. I think Gakpo's still finding his way. You know, Jota came off the bench, didn't he, against Everton? So once him and Diaz are sort of among the options again, I think that will perk Liverpool up. I was really impressed with Nunez against Everton. I know the finishing still remains wild and some of his decision making is not absolutely perfect, but he is a threat out on that left hand side, and I thought he played really well against Everton. And you know, I don't see the attack as the biggest issue for Liverpool at the moment. I still worry about them defensively, and that was even when Van Dijk was playing. I just didn't feel like they were defending well as a unit or as a team. And I'm not going to suddenly think that everything's okay after a clean sheet against Everton. I mean, Liverpool nearly always beat Everton at Anfield. It doesn't matter who the manager there is, who the players are. You know, it's a game where there's just an inferiority complex there from Everton. And, you know, I don't see that with Newcastle at St James's. Obviously, the atmosphere will be much different for Liverpool.
Having weighed up all of the markets, what have you landed on for your bet here?
Wouldn't be amazed if it was a draw, but I'm going to go for Newcastle draw, no bet. They've only lost once in the Premier League this season. That was that last minute loss at Anfield in the reverse fixture. I mean, Liverpool, their form has just not been good, you know, particularly away from home. And they've got Real Madrid on Tuesday, and I need to see more than a win over Everton to suddenly think that, you know, that the Red Revolution is in full swing.
Good stuff. Let's get into the rest of the Premier League action. And we'll start Saturday, 12:30, Aston Villa against Arsenal. We mentioned Arsenal earlier on in the show, Mark. What's been the reason for their kind of slight downwards trend in form?
I would say that it's just football would be okay. One of them. You know, they picked up, was it 50 points first half of the season? Like, they're never going to get to 100. Or even the high 90s. It just, I think it's unachievable for this Arsenal squad to ask them to get anything like what they did in the first half. So they just overachieve, and now they're going to drop back. And in football, teams drop points. You know, you will have that game against a Brentford-type team where you don't win. And I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, it wasn't that Arsenal were being lucky. They just weren't having much bad luck. And now they are having a touch of bad luck where things are just going against them slightly. But that happens over, you know, the course of a season. You will get their moments. You know, like I was speaking to an Arsenal fan in the office this morning, and he was bemoaning the fact that they had to go to Everton when it was Sean Dyche's first game in charge. And yeah, that's not what you want. You don't want to be going to Everton for Dyche's first game in charge. But when they played Brighton a few weeks before, they were missing Caicedo and McAllister. You know, these things happen over a season. So I think Arsenal just need to refocus themselves, aim for a points tally that I think that is achievable, mid-80s, and then just see where that takes them. If they can get to 84, 85 points, you know, is that good enough to win the league? It might not be, because City have routinely been getting more than that. I don't think City are quite playing as well, though. So the problem for Arsenal will come if they panic, start trying to do things that, you know, I suppose not repeat what they, the way that they've been playing, try to do different things. This game, though, is awkward because it's a quick turnaround. The disappointment of Wednesday, first up on Saturday, Partey's injury, I think, was a big blow for them against Man City. But that happens in football. You can't always rely on the same 11 players. You will get injuries, and they haven't had many injuries this season. Obviously, now Gabriel Jesus is out. We don't know about Thomas Partey. I think Martinelli's gone off the boil just a touch, and he's played a lot of football, and maybe Trossard needs to come in just to freshen things up as much as anything else in that forward line. I'll put Martinelli through the middle and try Trossard out wide. But I don't think it should be all doom and gloom at the Emirates. They've just had one of those kind of 10 days in a Premier League season that you basically any team gets at one stage, but they need to not make too big a deal of it. And that's easier said than done. And Arteta needs to keep his head as well, I think.
He does, yeah. What's the bet for this one?
I was going to go for a draw just because, like I say, the quick turnaround, that kind of morale issue that Arsenal possibly have got. And this is an awkward game against their former manager. It sounds like Mings might be back, which I think is quite important for Aston Villa because they didn't defend well without him at Man City last week. They did also concede four against Leicester before that. So I'm not mad on Aston Villa, but maybe just from the situation for Arsenal is not perfect and the odds on, I can leave them alone.
Okay, let's get into the Saturday 3 o'clock action this week then. And it feels like we have quite a few of them, which is exciting. It also feels like we've got some tough calls. But last week I said the exact same thing and Mark fired in 9 out of 10 winners. So let's hope for more of the same this week. We'll start with Brentford against Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I thought Brentford were a fair enough price to win this game. I mean, Crystal Palace have had a hard run of fixtures. Fulham, Bournemouth was the game that they won. They played Tottenham, Chelsea, Man United twice, Newcastle and Brighton. But Bournemouth was the only win during that. Their XG against 9.3 in their last five games, not good. Only Bournemouth have got a worse attacking expected goals in the whole of the Premier League. So don't think Palace are doing many things well at the moment. Obviously, Zaha's been out. And yeah, Brentford just tick along nicely. So yeah, I'll go for a Brentford win.
Okay, Brighton, Fulham up next. Two teams that have probably overachieved to a certain degree this season.
Well, yeah, more than a little bit on sort of wage bills. But in terms of actual performances, I think you'd be hard-pushed to say that they're in sort of undeserved positions.
Absolutely, yeah.
Particularly Brighton, obviously, been playing fantastically well, putting up some great numbers as well, on the underlying stats. I just think that is really influencing the market too much, in my opinion. So I was going to go, it's almost reluctantly to oppose Brighton, but I was going to go for Fulham or draw double chance. I mean, if you have a look at Brighton, I mean, they've been fantastic since Christmas. Two draws and a defeat to Arsenal, and they've obviously won the rest. But then I look at Fulham since Christmas, and they've only had two defeats in their last 11 as well. So two teams in good form and at the prices. I can oppose Brighton, I think. It is reluctantly, but, prices dictate bets.
Absolutely. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the next game, Chelsea against Southampton. Now, we must say a goodbye to Nathan Jones, who was running his race. I did enjoy his comments once again in an entertaining press conference where he said something along the lines of he could have chose the easy life, been a PE teacher and married a nice Welsh girl, stayed in his mining town, but chose to challenge himself. Well, maybe he might be going back to his mining town after his displays at Southampton. Chelsea in need of a win as well. Which way do you see this going?
I was going to go for Chelsea to win and under 3.5 goals as the way to go. We know Chelsea are not making the most of the chances they're creating. So that's a problem for them. They've actually got a dodgy record against Southampton. They've only won 3 of their last 9 games against Southampton, which if you think about kind of the difference in quality between those teams. Not amazing. But Southampton, I mean, what, they're just a club in absolute crisis. I mean, Jesse Marsh was 101 on Betfair, and then the deal fell through to become their next manager. Like, why did they appoint Nathan Jones in the first place? And then what is their plan for, you know, to succeed him? They don't seem to have one. Southampton, though, they lost 16 games this season. Seven of them were 1-0. So they're a team that actually don't get hammered too often. Only four have gone over 3.5 goals of those 16 defeats. And three of those were against Man City, Liverpool, and De Zerbi's Brighton, who are, you know, three of the most free-scoring teams in the league. The other was against Newcastle, who scored with all four of their shots on target. So when Southampton lose, it doesn't tend to be in a high-scoring game. So I go for Chelsea in under 3.5.
It always feels slightly concerning, Mark, doesn't it, when a team sort of sacks their manager and then the first one on the shortlist is another manager that's just been sacked. It just feels slightly kind of chaotic at the moment at Southampton.
Yeah, I mean, it is, because I don't know what went on behind the scenes at Southampton. And maybe Hasenhüttl had to go because, you know, it wasn't working and everything like that. But they've appointed one manager that's definitely worse than him, and they were going to appoint another manager that was worse than him as well. So I always, you know, if you're going to sack a manager, make sure the next one's better than the one you've sacked, would be my advice.
Everton Leeds, Jesse Marsh's former club, Leeds in need of a win. So are Everton. This is a big one.
It is. I'm going to go against expected goals here, because Leeds are doing quite well on underlying stats, and that is having an influence in the market. I think that Everton can ride against that. I'm going to bet situational rather than on the stats. And I'm going to go for Everton draw no bet in this game. I think they should be stronger favourites than they are. They're narrow favourites. I think they, you know, they should be. I mean, Dyche got them going against Arsenal. They always do badly at Anfield. I'm just not reading too much into that game. And we just don't know if Skubala, who looks like he's getting the Leeds job for the rest of the season, is good enough. Really hard to say at the moment. And yeah, I just think Everton, you prefer it if Calvert-Lewin was fit, and we don't know his fitness status at the moment, but I'll still go with them anyway.
Forest against Man City up next. And Mark, I feel as if, because there's been, you know, we spoke about Fulham and Brighton and Newcastle being great this season, it almost feels like Forest have gone under the radar a little bit. I'm not saying they've done as well as the teams I've just mentioned, but considering the situation in the summer and newly promoted side, like, a solid job from them so far.
Yeah, Steve Cooper, I think, has done really well to mould them into anything like a team with, what was it, 30 signings, 30 new players coming in. They're much better at home than they are away from home. They don't tend to lay a glove on teams on the road, so they are relying on their City ground form. I don't think they're getting anything out of this game against Manchester City. I was going to go for City minus one on the handicap. They've only played three away games against the current bottom seven Man City. They won 3-0 at Wolves, 2-0 at West Ham, and 3-1 at Leeds. So covered the minus one on all three occasions, and I think they can do so again.
Okay, let's take a look at Wolves against Bournemouth. I think it was about 6 weeks ago you said that Bournemouth would start to slide, and indeed they have. But they'll be pleased with their last outing against Newcastle, where they drew 1-1.
They will, yeah, and played quite well. I'm going to go for over 2.5 goals in this game, and I know it doesn't scream an over 2.5 goals, Wolves against Bournemouth, but I think the Wolves are more adventurous under Lopetegui. He seems to know how to make them attack, and plus they've brought in some quality in those forward positions. Bournemouth's last four games have been under 2.5, and so it looks like they're an unders team. There's only been seven goals in those four games, but the expected goals was 11.4. So I think there's going to be a turn soon in Bournemouth's games in terms of, you know, them becoming higher scoring, and therefore value proposition over 2.5 goals at Molineux.
Okay, let's get into Sunday's action then. We'll start with Manchester United against Leicester. Leicester, Mark, a fascinating couple of weeks for them. 4-2 win against Villa, 4-1 win against your boys Spurs. What's been the difference for them in the last couple of weeks?
Brought in a couple of new defenders, which will help to some extent. James Maddison's back. If you have a look at Leicester's results with and without Maddison, he's one of the most important players in the league. Leicester lost five, drawn one, and won one of the seven Premier League games without Maddison. And he makes a huge difference to them. We've seen that in both of the games since he's returned in terms of the Premier League. Anyway, he's just real quality. So I think that's the difference. Like I say, they have brought in a couple of new defenders, which also helps. I think they've got a decent chance in this game. I was almost going to put them up to win, and I couldn't put anybody off the win, but I'm just going to go for Leicester or draw, double chance. Obviously, United have got this game away to Barcelona on Thursday. Not ideal preparation for a Premier League game on the Sunday. And Leicester have scored four against Villa and four against Spurs, so they carry a threat. Harvey Barnes, a player I really like. I think he should score more goals, but a player I really like off the left. Difficult to know who their best striker is, but Iheanacho, numbers-wise, you know, his goals and assists for his sort of minutes on the pitch is really high. So you know, maybe they've stumbled on the right solution there. And yeah, I just think that they've got a decent chance at Old Trafford against a United team that, you know, let's face it, they could have lost to Leeds at home not that long ago and made hard work of it at Elland Road as well. So yeah, let's give Leicester a decent chance.
Okay, excited for that one. Sunday, 4:30, Spurs against West Ham. Mark, you've gone from beating City 1-0 to losing 4-1 to Leicester and 1-0 to AC Milan. What's gone wrong in the last couple of outings?
I didn't see the Leicester collapse coming. I mean, in terms of what's gone wrong, it's hard to say. Obviously, Bentancur is now injured, which is a big problem because he's a quality player for Spurs. They just don't defend well enough individually or collectively. Romero's form has been inconsistent. Fans are getting on the back of Eric Dier. Like, Sessegnon's out injured, so Perisic is having to play every week. The problem at right back or right wing back is that Emerson's much better defensively. Pedro Porro is much better going forward, but struggled defensively against Leicester. So the balance of the team isn't amazing. Conte's came back, didn't he, from the operation and was on the touchline for the last couple of games, but he's now been told to stay in Italy. It's just a bad vibe around the place at the moment. You know, if you listen to sort of some of the Spurs podcasts, you get more and more people just saying, well, if Conte doesn't want to be here, he should go. And you know, fans have been calling for the owners to leave. There's a takeover bid, according to the Financial Times. So it's just an unsettling period. And I think a club's always at its sort of strongest when everybody's pulling in the same direction. And that's not the case at the moment.
In terms of this game, how do you see it panning out?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to take on Tottenham, but I actually thought that they'd be shorter than they are. So, you know, the bookmakers are also sensing, I think, a vulnerability in Tottenham. So I'm just going to go for both teams to score. And I've got, I think, a good stat to back this up. West Ham have scored in 22 of their last 25 games against Tottenham. And if you think about the difference in quality that there's been in terms of league position during that time, I think that's an outstanding run from the Hammers. And it's not a surprise, though, when you think about this game. West Ham fans will forgive a lot, but they will not forgive West Ham rolling over against Tottenham. So they'll put Spurs under pressure. I mentioned earlier, I don't think Tottenham are defending very well, but they have got those forwards. And you've got Richarlison and Danjuma on the bench. They've got five really quality forwards that should be able to score in this game.
Great stuff. There's your Premier League card marked. Time to look at the EFL.
And now we're joined by Racing Post EFL guru Dan Childs to talk all things Championship, League One and League Two for the weekend. You okay, Childsy?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Mark. Yeah.
I know you're a man of routine, so I'm guessing you've got three bets for us this weekend. Is that right?
Yeah, I've got the three. Yeah, one from the Championship and two from League Two.
Okay, let's start with your best one.
I think the best one's probably the Championship one, which is that Norwich away to Wigan.
Oh, Jack's excited already.
I think Norwich, I've been following them quite closely, you know, under David Wagner. Started off with two big wins, you know, the 4-0 at Preston and the 4-2 away to Coventry. So, you know, he's got them playing immediately with, you know, a bit more flair and there's a bit more intensity, I feel, to their play. Then they had a couple of tough games. It's just kind of understandable. They lost 3-0 at home to Burnley. Shocking goalkeeping error that sort of started that off. And the game at Bristol City last week, Bristol City been on a long unbeaten run. They lost that 1-0. I don't think that was such a, you know, such a disaster. And the game, the following game against Hull at home, Hull been on a great run, one loss in 10 games. They've gone behind and come storming back, beat them 3-1. And I look at the way they played, the highlights that I've seen of the game and the shot count, won the shot count 21-3. It just felt more like the Norwich that you'd expect to see, really, in the Championship over the last few seasons. They look like he's really getting you know, a lot more out of them than they had under Dean Smith. And Wigan have also improved under a new manager. Sean Maloney's gone in there, got them off the bottom of the table. Got not conceding as many goals, three games without a defeat. But the only win in those three was a 1-0 at home at Huddersfield, who I feel were probably the worst team in the division. So I do think that Norwich's revival under a new manager has got more legs maybe than Wigan's. And I look at the prices, Norwich are shade of odds against to go and win at Wigan. I think Norwich are going to finish the season strong. I expect them to end up in the playoffs, and I think they'll win at Wigan.
Right, OK. And you said there's two in League Two. Now, we've not discussed this, but I'm going to have a bit of a guess. I'm going to say that your two tips are Colchester and Gillingham. Am I right on any of them?
You've got one of them right. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. The Gillingham one's right. Yeah.
Okay. Go on. Let's start with Gills then.
Yeah, I'll start off with Gills. I mean, you probably know what I'm going to say. A lot of what I'm going to say here, that Gillingham, since the January business, a new owner's gone in there, and they're not just, you know, they're spending money to get, you know, arguably top end League Two, maybe even lower end League One players they've brought in, and they've improved massively. Couldn't score, you know, hardly any goals earlier in the season. Got a new front two of Ollie Hawkins and Tom Nichols, who are doing really well for them. Ollie Hawkins got a great header, the winning goal in a 2-1 win at home to Grimsby on Tuesday. And they've now got 13 points from their last six games, and they're going to Rochdale, the bottom of the table, you know, on a really, really poor run, Rochdale. And Gillingham's price, I mean, looking at the draw no bet price, given that it's a game between two struggling sides, it's only a shade of odds on. And given the way they're playing, I think that's a really strong bet. I would favour the draw no bet just because, looking at Rochdale, although they're on a poor run, last couple of games, they brought a couple of players in as well in January. They are playing a little bit better. They got a 1-1 draw home to Northampton last weekend, and they lost 2-1 away to Leighton Orient on Tuesday, which wasn't the worst performance. So Rochdale, I do get it. They are improving. But Gillingham, for me, are a totally different side. Draw no bet looks a great bet.
Okay, so is the other one Salford, or am I wrong again?
No, I'm not that predictable. No, I'm going to go with Mansfield. I'm going to go for a straight win away to Tranmere. Although you can get a good price for draw no bet, but around 2-1 for the straight win, Mansfield away to Tranmere, which I think is a really good bet. Mansfield up to fifth now, finding some Gillingham, you know how much I like them recently. They won 2-0 at home to Gillingham last weekend, which is a really good result. And then they've gone and won 4-0 on Tuesday away to Carlisle, who are in third place, which is an extraordinary result. They were 4-0 up at half-time in that game. So Nigel Clough's really got them going at the moment. They're up to fifth, only 3 points outside the top three. I think he'll be targeting that top three finish. And Tranmere have been sort of trying to get up towards the playoffs most of the season. They've dropped off recently under Mickey Mellon. Three defeats in their last four games. Lost 2-0 at Bradford on Tuesday. And Kieran Morris, who's probably their most influential winger, went off injured in the first half of that match. So a few problems for them. Jordan Turnbull, who's an influential centre-back, he missed out of injury as well. So Tranmere, given their small squad, lose a couple of big players. Few defeats recently. Confidence low. Look, a team to be taken on. So Mansfield for me in that one.
Okay, so we've got Mansfield, Gillingham and Norwich. Thanks very much, Dan. Enjoy the week.
You're welcome.
Great to hear from Dan Childs, as always, his check for backing Norwich in the post. Mark, let's take a look at your best bets for this week. Then you've had a lot of success with the prop shop this season. Hopefully it continues this weekend.
Well, the bookmakers are running scared. There weren't enough prices up by the time we're recording this on Thursday morning. I think the midweek games has sort of impacted on that, which is very annoying. So I can't go for a shot-based bet this week. Not easy to say either. You've got to be very careful. I'm going to go for Dean to be booked at 4-1 Aston Villa. Is it Dean or Digne? I'm never quite sure. I've heard both be pronounced. But fact is, Aston Villa left back got it all to do against Saka. And if you have a look at the stats, four of the last five Premier League games, the person playing at left back has been booked against Arsenal. Bernardo Silva, I mean, ridiculous he was playing there, but he was, and he got booked. Mikalenko for Everton, Luke Shaw for Man United, Ryan Sessegnon for Spurs. And I think what happens is it doesn't always have to be for the foul on Saka, but you're constantly fouling him, and then you maybe the full foul is against somebody else and you end up in the book. But, you know, he just draws fouls from defenders. So Dean was booked last week at Man City as well. So, I think he'll have a tough afternoon on his hands against Saka.
Okay, how about a long shot?
Well, I'm going to go 28-1 each way. Tarkowski to score first. I mean, it feels a bit obvious, doesn't it, for about a 28-1 shot? But, you know, it's the old Burnley way, wasn't it? McNeil puts it into the back post. Tarkowski got his head onto that one against Arsenal and scored. Then he hit the post against Liverpool. So it's not like it's going under the radar, what Everton are trying to do. Leeds are not amazing defending set pieces either. So I expect Everton to target that back post again. And Tarkovsky's price hasn't changed. And I just think that it should do now that Dyche is there and we know what they're trying to do from those set pieces.
Love the sound of that one. We had a treble winner last week. Let's try and get it up again this week.
So I'm going to go both teams to score in Manchester United against Leicester. Obviously, United considerably better than Leicester, but no doubt that Brendan Rodgers' team carry a big threat on the counter-attack. I spoke in the game that I wouldn't be amazed if they won there or got something out of the game, but they're not going to do that in a 0-0 way, or at least I wouldn't expect them to. Big quality in the final third, particularly with Maddison. And, you know, I always like a both teams to score bet when the underdogs, you know, you fancy them to get on target. Going to stick with the both teams to score Sunday theme. For Tottenham against West Ham. Tottenham, we know they've got, you know, a lot of quality in the final third. Defensively, just not up to it at the moment. And, you know, that kind of Man City win feels, that sort of the way they did that feels almost like the anomaly rather than the norm for them. So West Ham scored in 22 of their last 25 games against Spurs. Always give it a good go at White Hart Lane. So I'll go for both teams to score there. And then finally, Real Madrid to win away to Osasuna. Look, it's a difficult place to go. The old cliche, Pamplona in February, you know, wouldn't be the nicest trip for any sort of, you know, Galactico-style team. And Real Madrid don't put up great numbers on expected goals, which is why I think they go off at reasonable prices. But they just find ways to win matches more often than not. And, you know, their extra quality usually tells. And they're only a shade of odds on. And I just think away from home, Real Madrid, shade of odds on. I'm happy to back them in most games. I've said it more than once on the pod this season. And there's a reason why they go off at decent prices. Like I say, on the shot stats, they're not as good as, say, Barcelona. But I don't think they need to be. So, yeah, so it's Real Madrid to win away at Osasuna. Both teams to score in the United, Manchester United and Tottenham games.
Been sweet on Real Madrid this season, haven't you? If you were to have one bet this week, what's the strongest one? Time for your nap.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't feel hugely confident, but the one that stood out to me was both teams to score at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday. You know, West Ham have been sort of nicking goals and Danny Ings is back, so that obviously gives them more of a threat. Bowen has returned to something like the form that he was in last season. I don't think he's playing quite as well. But they've got a lot of attacking players, West Ham, and they're also dangerous from set pieces. I can definitely see them scoring against Tottenham. They usually do. And then from a Spurs point of view, there are problems within that Tottenham team, but I don't think up front is one of them.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Thanks to Mark, as always. A big thanks to Dan Charles for his insight on the EFL as well. Mark had a brilliant week last week. Hopefully he follows in again. But remember, only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We will be back again next Thursday for more Mark Langdon's Best Part.